Purim is almost upon us. I would like to spend this short time together looking more closely at the obligation of women in Megillah reading. I hope that we can use it as an example to the window into the complexities of the status of women in Judaism as a whole. I hope that by looking more closely at the issue, we will see that things are not exactly as they seem. In the spirit of Purim of Nahafohu, turning things upside down, I hope that some of our preconceived notions about women's status within Rabbinic Judaism will be turned on their head. The Gemara in Masachet Megillah, on the fourth page, Amud Aleph, says the following. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavot b'mikra Megillah, sh'af hen hayu ba'oto hanes. Women are obligated in the reading of Megillah, for even they were included in the miracle. This statement made by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi uses a reason to explain why women are obligated in the reading of Megillah. This phrase, even they were part of the miracle, is used in two other places in rabbinic literature. It is also given as an explanation for why women are obligated in lighting Hanukkah candles, and as well for why women are obligated to drink four cups of wine at the Passover Seder. These three are an example of rabbinic mitzvot. To understand what this phrase means, they too were included in the miracle, we can look to some traditional commentaries. Rashi explains that also upon the women did Haman make the decree that he wanted to completely destroy, kill, and wipe out the Jewish people. And so they too were saved from being killed by Haman's evil decree. Tosfot bring an idea in the name of Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, where he says, "Sheikar hanes haya al yadan." The essence of the miracle was done by the hand of a woman. This works well for Purim, as we know, with our heroine Esther. However, it's a bit more difficult to connect a woman to the Hanukkah story and to the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim, of going out of Egypt. However, he does so. This is a very interesting idea to give a reason why women are obligated mitzvot. First of all, I want to say something in general about rabbinic mitzvot. What is fascinating to us when we think about women's status within Judaism is that across the board, when the rabbis decided to institute a new mitzvah that had absolutely no precedent, and they had to figure out whether women were going to be obligated or not, they chose to obligate women as well. And this, I think, to me is fascinating when I'm trying to understand how they're thinking about women's status. First of all, Rashi makes a very interesting statement. He does it by another rabbinic mitzvah, which is tefillah, although there a different reason is given. He states that he does not believe that the general exemption that we might know of women being exempt from positive mitzvot that are caused by time, he thinks this exemption, the whole category of exemption, does not exist with rabbinic mitzvot. He doesn't give us a reason why he says this. Possibly he just looks across the board and sees that women are obligated in all of them. Possibly it's a more technical halachic issue that I can't discuss right now. But that's fascinating, that he thinks this big category, which is sort of the basis for understanding about women's obligation in mitzvot, doesn't apply. The Tosafists disagree with him. They agree that women are obligated in all these mitzvot. They just think that each one of these is an exception to the rule. And that is why we needed this explanation of af hen hayu ba'oto hanes stated. Now, this is also a very, very interesting idea. Because what does it mean that their experience of the miracle should override the exemption, right? Purim is definitely a positive mitzvah that's caused by time. Go through most of the year, there's no obligation to read the Megillah. Suddenly it becomes either the 14th of Adar or the 15th of Adar, and there is an obligation. So it's definitely a positive mitzvah caused by time, and according to the rule, women should be exempt. But Tosfot understand, and as seemingly Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi does, that the women's experience of the miracle of the divine in their life, of saving them, and women's experience of being part of Am Yisrael as a whole and experiencing this salvation sort of overrides any preordained assumptions and categories made about one's gender. One's experience of God in one's life and one's experience as a member of the Jewish people is what determines women's obligation in these mitzvot. And that to me is very interesting. That sort of makes it very difficult For us to make any sort of objective truth statements about understanding how or why women are exempt from mitzvot. I can't discuss every explanation that's ever given, but a very modern, it's definitely a modern explanation that's given, and in my opinion, somewhat apologetic, that, oh, women are on a higher spiritual level, therefore they don't need these extra mitzvot to connect them to God, right? Clearly, Chazal don't think that to be the case, because the whole purpose of being obligated in this mitzvah is to connect one to the experience of the divine in the world and to experience of the divine in one's personal salvation. So that explanation is turned on its head for us with this. Even if you want to say some of the more traditional explanations that it has to do something with women's status in relationship to her husband or relationship to her family obligations, here too, those notions are turned on their head because it seems to be that it's women's place as part of a member of the people of Israel and her experience in that group vis-a-vis God's acting within history that determines her obligation in mitzvot and not her relationship to her core nuclear family. And so for me, this is the first thing that I find very fascinating about examining this issue. It seems like the rabbis are moving towards a model of more obligation in mitzvot and not less. When they had the choice about how to decide women's obligation in these three and four, if you add tefillahs, mitzvot, they across the board said, we want to obligate women in mitzvot. That's interesting fact number one. Thing number two is when we, now that we've determined that women are obligated, there is a question of agency. Can she be an agent for others? Can she read Megillah on behalf of other people? And we know within the Jewish community, this is a very hot and sort of touch button topic of people where people get upset or worried. It's one thing vis-a-vis women's obligation to God on her own, but how can she function within community? And so interestingly, the Mishnah Masechet Megillah in the second chapter makes a very sweeping statement. It says, Hakol k'sherim likro et ha-Megillah. All are eligible, are fit to read the Megillah. And to continue on this theme, the Gemara in Erchin on the second page and the top of the third page connects this statement in the Mishnah that all are eligible to read to our statement of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi that said women were obligated. The Gemara says as follows, Hakol chayvim b'mikra Megillah, Hakol k'sherim likrot et ha-Megillah. Right, it quotes a piece of Tanaitic material that says all are obligated in the reading of Megillah, and then it quotes our Mishnah, all are eligible to read the Megillah. And then the Gemara goes on to ask a question, La tuye mai, who does this include when it says Hakol? Who are we including that we might have otherwise thought wouldn't have been included? And the Gemara says very clearly, La tuye nashim, to include women. Kida'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. De'amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, nashim chayvot b'mikra Megillah she'afhen hayu ba'otones. As Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi stated, women are obligated in the reading, for even they were included in the miracle. Right? And this text seems to be very clear. Women are obligated, therefore they're eligible, and we restate that women are obligated explicitly because of their experience in the Purim story itself. On the page of the Gemara, right there, Rashi explains, on La Tuye Nashim, to include women, Rashi says, Shechayevot b'mikra Megillah, u'ksherot likrota lehotzi zacharim yedei chavatam, that she is obligated in the reading of Megillah, and she is eligible to read her, the Megillah, to fulfill the obligation on behalf of males. She can read Megillah for men, and men can fulfill their obligation. These statements here in the Mishnah and the two statements in the Gemara have a very loud and clear voice that women are obligated in Megillah and can be agents for others. Interestingly, there is a piece of Tanaitic material which we find not codified in our Talmud, but it is found in the Tosefta, that has a very different voice, completely opposite voice. This Tosefta wants to state that actually the main definition and the main defining factor for whether you can be an agent for others is your sex. Are you male or are you female? And the Tosefta opens up similar to our Gemara's Braita and says, Hakol chayvim b'mikriat Megillah. All are obligated in the reading of the Megillah, just like our text in Erchin said. But then it goes on and lists, and it lists every possible type of male you can think of. It opens with Kohen, Levi, and Yisrael, but goes on to say even Chalalim, Kohanim, who have lost their status, even Mamzerim, people who are the offspring of an illicit sexual relationship. And then it even lists four types of men that have lost their manliness. Either their testicles have been crushed, or they are completely castrated, or their penis has been cut off. And even these men who are lost their genitalia, which defines them as men, all these people are obligated in the reading of the Megillah and can be motzi other people and can fulfill the obligation on behalf of others. Then the text interestingly goes on and mentions, well, what about people who are partially male and partially female? What about an androgynous? And what about a tumtum, someone who we don't know whether they're male or female? And here too, the text gives particular rulings based on the understanding of the sex of the person. The Tosefta ends by saying that Nashim va'avadim uktanim pturim ve'ein motzim et harabim yedei chavotan, that women, slaves, and minors are exempt and they cannot fulfill the obligation on behalf of others, right? And it's this line that helps us understand the status of the androgynous, someone who's both male and female. An androgynous can fulfill the obligation on behalf of other androgyni, or androgynouses, I don't know how to say the plural, that is because he's part man and part woman, so he can fulfill it on behalf of someone who's part man and part woman, but he can't fulfill the obligation on behalf of someone who is entirely 100% male. And the tumtum can't even read for other tumtumim for fear that one might be a tumtum who's female and one might be a tumtum that's male, and clearly a female cannot read on behalf of a male. So this Tosefta has a very loud voice that says that one's sex, whether one is male or female, is the defining factor for if one could be able to read for others. And it's clear to us that our Gemara doesn't choose to go that way. Our Mishnah and our Gemara reject this Tosefta and say with a very loud, strong voice that we want to include women in the eligibility of being able to read for others. Now, this is interesting and is even a bit surprising, as one could imagine, because it doesn't really fit with our picture of women's role in general. We know plenty of mitzvot where there might be a problem with women being an agent for others. And when we look at Megillah reading, something that's so public, its whole purpose is to publicize the miracle, and is done in a large group of people, preferably even a minyan, we're going to talk about that in a minute, it seems strange that the voice of the normative tradition would be so loud and clear that women are eligible to do this. And that sort of dissonance, that it doesn't really fit with what we know about women's status, is reflected in a very famous Gaonic work that sort of changes the flow of how the halachic process works after the time period of the Mishnah and the Gemara. And that is a book called Hilchot Gedolot. And it's the author of this book is unknown, but we refer to him as the Bahag, the Baal Hilchot Gedolot, the author of this book called The Great Book of Halacha. And in this book, he makes an interesting statement. He quotes Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, but instead of saying that women are obligated in the reading of Megillah, he says women are obligated only in the hearing of Megillah. And he bases this because he quotes the Tosefta that I just read to you above. I'm not going to read it again, but he goes through the whole list of people. And at the very end, he slightly changes it because he can't have women being completely exempt from Megillah reading, right? This text is, right, the Tosefta assume that women were completely exempt. It doesn't tell us why. Possibly it's a positive mitzvah caused by time. Possibly it doesn't fit into women's status of being subservient in the domain of someone else. And so he, at the ending line of the Tosefta, has to sort of rework it because he can't completely go against the Mishnah and the Gemara. And he says, Nashim v'avadim uktanim p'turim mikriat Megillah elech shechayvim b'mashma. They're not obligated in the reading, they're only obligated in listening. He says, why? And he says, everyone was in doubt whether Haman was going to kill them. And so therefore, everyone has obligated to hear the story of the salvation. So this is a fascinating thing what the Bahag has done. He's done something actually quite creative. He's created a completely new opinion that did not exist before. Up until now, the Mishnah and the Gemara said women were obligated in the reading and could read for others. The Tosefta had an opinion that was rejected by the Mishnah and the Gemara that said something completely opposite. Women are not obligated at all and therefore cannot read for anyone at all. And the Bahag, I assume due to some type of dissonance between his reality of what he knows about women, possibly he quotes Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi as having a different version of the Gemara itself. I checked all the manuscripts of the Gemara and I cannot find a manuscript that has the word to hear as opposed to what appears in our text and in all the manuscripts that it says to read. He creates a new position. Women aren't really obligated in the reading. They only have to hear, which will cause problems in the future. If you hold like the Bahag, maybe women can't be agents to read for men. And clearly they are in a much more passive situation here. They're going to hear the story and they're not going to be the active readers. This dissonance that possibly the Bahag felt, which motivated him to manipulate or change what the text was saying about women's obligation, in some ways, although I don't like what it did to the course of halakha, is understandable. Because actually, when we think about the rabbis themselves in the time period of the Mishnah and the Gemara, it's somewhat shocking that they actually told us that women are obligated to read and are eligible to read and didn't put any qualifications or hesitations on it. Because there are numerous other places in the Mishnah and Talmud where they do that. They do that very thing, not the Mishnah, but in Tanaitic material. Two very, very famous cases that are going to be quoted by numerous Rishonim are the case of Birkat HaMazon, firstly, and secondly, the case of Torah reading. In Birkat HaMazon, there's a very famous statement in Masechet Brachot that says that a wife could say Birkat HaMazon on behalf of her husband, and he will have fulfilled his obligation. But the rabbis say, no, I don't advise you to do that. He will be cursed if he lets his wife or sons make Birkat HaMazon for him. So legally it works, but socially we would never want such a thing to happen. Who would want to not know Birkat HaMazon and your lowly wife would know it? What an embarrassment. The same thing happens with Kriyat HaTorah. The Braita in Masechet Megillah says that women are eligible and are able to get an aliyah, to read from the Torah. Yet right in that same Braita it says, but the rabbi said, don't let a woman read from the Torah because there's something undignified about it for the community. And so built into these other mitzvot, which exists from texts from the very same time period as the texts that are talking about Megillah reading, are texts that say legally these type of things could work based on levels of obligation or eligibility to perform the mitzvah. But we have a social concern that there's something not right exactly about women letting women be the agents to have these mitzvot be performed on the behalf of men. Tosfot in Masechet Sukkah, in discussing the case of Birkat HaMazon, gives two reasons for this. He says one is, you know, men are just more important than women. And so therefore, it's a nicer way to do it if you have a man do it for you. A second suggestion, that's looking at it, the positive side of having men do it. A second suggestion that he suggests is that when things are done in public, if you let a woman be the agent for the community, it really is beneath the dignity of the men for this to happen. Zila Bahumilta. It's just not fitting and becoming for the men to have a woman be the agent representing the whole community. And so these ideas about women's social status, forget her obligation, I mean, so are very deeply rooted in some of the earlier texts that the rabbis present. And yet, surprisingly, none of the rabbinic texts in the Mishnah or the Talmud made any statement of concern with women being the agent to read Megillah. And that is really quite surprising, and we should notice it. Many of the Rishonim noticed this as well. And they say, wait, whoa, 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 I'm concerned. And they sort of put these social concerns on Megillah reading. They will say, well, yes, legally she could read for men, but maybe it's a problem of honor of the community. Legally, she could read for men, but maybe you would be cursed if you did that. And so they take the information that they learned from Chazal in other situations and apply it here to Megillah reading. At this moment, I'll just pause, because if I'm doing a whole podcast on Megillah reading, even though it's not the halakha, to sort of summarize the camps, so you know where the halakha goes, I'm not going to be able to talk about it. But basically, there is one main camp of Rishonim that thinks women are obligated in Megillah reading and can read for men. And most of them, in discussing it, actively cite the Bahag and reject him, saying, we go with what our codified Talmud says. We don't bring in outside sources that say other things. Example of that is like the Rashi I read for you on the page of Erechin, or Zeruah, the Rambam, the first opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. Another camp is like this last camp of Rishonim that I told you that says, yes, the texts say women are obligated in the reading of Megillah, but I'm worried about the social ramifications of that. I don't feel comfortable with that. Maybe it would be dishonorable. And that camp says you probably shouldn't do it. It would be better if you didn't. If she read, the man would have fulfilled his obligation. And those are like the Tosfot and Sukkah that I quoted to you, the Ritva, the second opinion in the Shulchan Aruch. And then there are some Rishonim that follow the view I presented to you in the Bahag that said that women have actually a different level of obligation. It's only to hear. Then it would be very problematic. They would not be able to read for other men. However, to rectify this view with the statement in the Gemara that said women are eligible to read, these camp of Rishonim said that, well, clearly they can read for other women. So I've raised a number of points of sort of where Megillah reading doesn't really fit with our preconceived notions of what women's status was in other mitzvot. The last thing I would like to raise for you is the question of the minyan. Very interestingly, there's a dispute whether you need 10 to read Megillah. And the Gemara cites Rav Asi, who suggests that really you should have 10 to read Megillah. Rav sort of admits that his position might be correct. The Rishonim have a dispute of, do they understand, is 10 required? There's a small group of Rishonim that believe that way. Most people think that, most of the Rishonim understand that 10 is the ideal, and it would be better because the whole concept of reading Megillah is to publicize the miracle, and the more people you have hearing this, the better it is. And so then there becomes a question, can women count in this 10, this type of quorum? It definitely seems to be different than other types of quorums we have. It's not considered a Devar Shebikdusha, something that completely sanctifies God's name. However, it definitely is something that publicizes the miracle that God did, and it is a representation of the public, of the Jewish people at large, who are proclaiming this miracle that God did. And can women make up that unit? How do we understand that? And the Ran says very succinctly and very clearly on this issue. He says, "Heyach efshar shemotziot anashim yedei kriya ve'ein mitzdarfot imaham laminyan ela vaday mitzdarfot." How could it possibly be that they can fulfill the obligation on behalf of men through the reading, and they wouldn't join with them in the minyan? Of course women can join in the minyan and make up the 10 of the minyan for Megillah reading with men. That is the Ran's opinion. And it's echoed by a number of other Rishonim, the Ritva, his Rav, his teacher, the Ra'ah, the Meiri, Nemuke Yosef, numerous people. And this too sort of changes our perception. If you ask the Joshmo Jew on the street, do women count in a minyan? I think you would get the answer, no, of course they don't. It's black and white. And clearly, now our minds are open up to say, maybe there are different types of minyanim, and maybe it isn't black and white, and maybe certain types of minyanim, I would like to suggest possibly all types of minyanim, but that's a different podcast, women could count in. For sure, this one of Megillah reading, there seems to be a very strong voice. Some people aren't so sure. The Rama in the Shulchan Aruch says he's b'safek. He doesn't know if women count, which is a fascinating thing to not be sure. There are very few places where he is writing in his code book the rule and he says he's in doubt. But there are definitely a loud voices that say yes. And for sure, if we ask the question, not just can women join with men, but how about women on their own, 10 individuals making up a 10 individual women, would they make up a quorum that would be a public statement of God's miracle? There are a number of people, actually modern achronim, like the Chazon Ish, the Tzitzeliezer, Rav Avadi Yosef, who say for sure 10 women can make up this quorum to publicize God's miracle. And so I hope I've sort of raised for you the fact and opened your eyes to the idea that women's obligation Megillah reading sort of changes a lot of our preconceived notions of what women's status is. For me, I'm not sure, I'm now going to speculate, why was it that the rabbis themselves in the time period of the Mishnah and the Gemara did not raise any of those social concerns that they had, which they clearly directly raised by Birkat HaMazon and Torah reading. Why was it that it seems they felt totally comfortable with women being obligated in Megillah reading and being the agents for others within the community to read? And I'd like to suggest, possibly it's a bit too drashy, it's a drasha, but I like it, that they felt that the whole nature of the story of Purim itself, where we had a woman saving the Jewish people, where Queen Esther acted as our agent to bringing divine salvation to the Jewish people, was a model of something different, of a different way of looking at things, right? But that's that very fact of the story itself turns our notions of sex and gender on its head, right? Because it's not usually queens that save people, it's kings. And so the story itself throws into question a lot of our assumptions about people's roles. And once that is the case, and we're publicizing the story, and we're celebrating the story, I think it makes a lot of sense to say that there shouldn't be anything undignified about women reading Megillah on behalf of the community. And in fact, they might be the prime examples of who should be the agents to do such a thing. I would like to believe that that was what motivated the rabbis in this case. Clearly, I don't know. I just have the facts on the ground that they didn't show any hesitation whatsoever in stating that women were fit to read the Megillah and eligible to do so on behalf of others. I hope these words of Torah have given you a little bit of a nahafochu, of a turning on your head, of turning upside down some of the preconceived notions we might have on the status of woman and her place in Jewish society. Chag Purim Sameach.